tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 9th of March 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I had a really good weekend. I went out with PA Wales and PA West Midlands. There were about a dozen of us. And we went to have a look at Powys Castle in Welshpool, which had lots of old paintings and even frescoes on the ceiling and tapestries. Amazing wealth going back about 100 years ago, I guess, 150 years ago. And it was owned by Clive of India, who made war against Tipu Sultan and defeated Tipu Sultan and subdued large parts of the Indian subcontinent for the British Empire. And they also had a museum there with artifacts from the battles which Clive of India took part in. They had swords and spears and chainmail and throwing knives and punching knives and Indian artifacts. And there were rugs made out of tigers, tiger skin rugs, bear skin rugs, all sort of stuff like that. It was a really good day, and we went and had a meal afterwards. And I'm really bringing this up here because I know we do have Welsh listeners or English listeners that are living in Wales. Some of them wrote to me while I was in prison, but they're not actually members of PA Wales. And I do recommend that people do join up, because we go out and have a community event or a cultural event at least once a month, and there's also at least once a month there's a protest as well, and we've got lots of exciting events planned for the coming year. And if you want to get involved in that, if you want to meet other nationalists in Wales and become part of the PA Wales community, then all you have to do is just contact me, send me a message, join the chat room, speak to me in the chat room, send me an email to stormersubs@hushmail.com, or you can join on the PA website and make inquiries through the general inquiries on the at patrioticalternative.org.uk. And I do recommend people do join up. As I say, we have a lot of fun. We go out and do lots of exciting things, lots of cultural events. The year before last, before I went to prison, we went to bird of prey displays. We went to visit other castles. We went to visit a microbrewery, looking at hops and beer and how they made beer and traditional beer making. It was really, really interesting stuff. And as I say, this weekend we were looking at this Clive of India museum, and it's run by the National Trust. And of course, the National Trust have been in the news over the last few years for their reimagining, I guess you could call it, of history, where instead of focusing on the great exploits of white philanthropists and explorers, they've made them out to be slave owners and made colonialism out to be a bad thing, when colonialism was a good thing when you look at it objectively. When you look at it and say, well, these countries, they never had, some of these countries never even had a system of writing before. And after colonialism, they had universities, they had roads, they had libraries, they had hospitals, they had schools. And the British Empire actually brought them all the wonders of Western civilization to places that never had a civilization before. And if you weigh that up against, in exchange for that, the British Empire took some raw resources and refined them. And if you bear in mind that these resources were not even being used before the British Empire went there, I think that's a reasonable exchange to be given all the gifts of civilization in exchange for some raw resources, raw materials that you're not actually using yet. But of course, today it's made out to be a terrible thing. Colonialism is supposed to be a bad thing, even though colonialism was brought into Africa to help end the slave trade. If you look in our Greatest Britain section at radioalbion.com, you'll see that we have a podcast on David Livingstone. And David Livingstone was the great anti-slavery campaigner that went to the Congo and saw the slavery that was going on there, saw how the Africans were enslaving other Africans. It was absolutely horrific. And he said the way that we can stop this is if we colonize the area, if we build ports and we build cities and we teach the Africans how to manufacture things out of their own raw materials, and then they can sell whatever items they have manufactured on the world's market. And this will mean that they no longer have to sell other Africans, because they will have other items that other people will want, because at the time, there was nothing that was actually being created by Africa that other parts of the world would want, apart from other Africans, which were useful as human labour, effectively. That had been the trade that had gone on in Africa. It was a slave-based economy for thousands of years. And David Livingstone wanted to put an end to that. So he suggested that we colonise Africa, teach them how to make other items, items that the rest of the world would want, and then there would no longer be a financial incentive for them to buy and sell other Africans. And I'm also bringing this up today because I have an article here from GB News that is to do with this. It's entitled "London Museum Covers Up Exhibition Portrait to Reclaim Caribbean History." And of course, it's not reclaiming Caribbean history, it's rewriting British history. And it's erasing British history. I mean, what history was there in the Caribbean before white people went there and turned it into farmland? Incidentally, before there were any black slaves in the Caribbean, there were white slaves in the Caribbean, and they prepared the land so that it could be used for farming. Then they brought the black slaves in to pick the fruit and do other farm labour. And this is another point here. People hear about slavery and they think, oh, all of this ill-gotten gains, these people, they never paid any wages, they never had to pay these people. And that's a fallacy, because they were paid in kind. If you were a slave, you had your house paid for, you had your quarters that you lived in, you were given a certain amount of land that you could grow your own food on, so you were fed as well. You were given clothing, so you had your clothes paid for. If you needed a creche for the children, the creche was paid for. If you were too old to work, you were still paid for. In effect, you were given a pension. The only difference that there is that today we can go out and buy our own clothes. We can make our own choices on what clothes we want. We can make our own choices on what food we want. Back then, you didn't have all the shops and the stores that we have today where you could buy all these different things. And you needed to get these things from somewhere, and the slave owner provided it. And if you look at the wages that people get today, if you are paying a mortgage, once you've paid the mortgage and once you've paid for your clothes and once you've paid for your food, you might have a little bit of money left over. You might have 10% of your wages left over. And you bear in mind, in slavery times, you didn't need a mortgage, you didn't need to buy your own food, you didn't need to buy your own clothes. All of these things were provided. So the only difference today is that we actually get given these tokens of exchange ourselves, so that we have this illusion of working for ourselves, when in actual fact it's just the same system as slavery was. Really, it's just that now if we run out of money or we get debts, we can get kicked out of our house. If we're unable to work, the boss doesn't pay for us. If we have children, the boss doesn't pay for us to have a creche. When we get too old to actually work, our boss is no longer required to actually keep us and pay a pension for us. The boss is only required to pay you for the work that you actually do. So there were positives to the slavery system as well as there were negatives to the slavery system. And just to go back to David Livingstone as well, if you look at the way that the black Africans treated their black African slaves, it was absolutely horrendous. They had no worth whatsoever. Their only worth was just in, well, how many slaves have you got? Well, that was a sort of value that a man had. And when a chief died, all his slaves would be put to death as well. Or they could be used as human sacrifices. I mean, really horrendous things went on. We have a narration from eyewitness accounts from the Congo, slavery that was going on in the Congo. And I can imagine white Europeans going there and being absolutely horrified at that. And then thinking, well, surely these people would be better off working on our farms in Africa than they work, in America. Surely these people would be better off working on our farms in America than they would be here. And I can see the Europeans thinking that they were doing these black African slaves a favour by bringing them to the farms in America where they would be looked after, where they wouldn't be worked into the ground. They would literally just have to pick fruit or pick cotton or do something like that. I mean, it was low-skilled labour. And instead of being starved and mistreated like they were in Africa, they would be well-treated and they would be treated as something that was essential over there in America to working on the farm. Whereas they weren't treated as anything essential in Africa because there was just so many of them. If you wanted some more of them, all you had to do was go out to the next village and club them over the head with a club, put them in chains, and then you've got these slaves, haven't you? And that's the way that it was done in Africa. Whereas in America, people had to pay a lot of money for these slaves. They'd made an investment. It's like if you pay a lot of money for today for something like an expensive car, you're going to maintain that car, aren't you? You're not going to drive it into the ground, not ever give it an oil change, allow it to get into a state of disrepair. You're going to look after it so that it retains its value. And if you had a slave who was required for working on the farm, especially in the hot parts of America, that was the reason for it, because it was just too hot for white people to be able to do that work in the tropics. Whereas black Africans were used to that heat, and they were also fairly immune to certain types of diseases that also come with the heat. And this was the reason why they were there. So I'm not saying slavery is a good thing. What I'm saying is that slavery was the accepted system of employment 200 years ago. And we also had white slaves in Britain, indentured servitude. And we even had white child slaves in Britain. We had chimney sweeps that were 5 or 6 years old that were essentially enslaved. If they ran away, they would be caught and then handed back to the chimney sweep. And they would have to climb up the chimney, 6 or 7 years of age, in all that dust and effectively sweep out the chimney. And while that was going on, we had people in Parliament complaining about the slave trade in Africa. But what about the slave trade in Britain at the time? Let's have a look at this GB News article anyway. London Museum Docklands has draped a multicoloured fabric over an early 19th century portrait in a bid to reclaim Caribbean history. So this is, as I say, they're not reclaiming anything. What they're actually doing is erasing something. They're erasing this person and his history. The piece depicts Beeston Long, a former Bank of England governor who profited from slave labour, with the cloth representing Caribbean nations partially obscuring the painting. So what was so wrong with profiting from slave labour? As I say, it was the same thing in Britain at the time. If somebody in Britain wanted to work, they needed the work, they would be given somewhere to live. They would be given a certain amount of land on which to grow their crops on so that they could feed themselves. They would be given clothing and they would essentially be looked after by the Lord. Evidence for this is in the letter that was written to Queen Elizabeth I. And that was actually complaining about blackamoors. That was the term used. Blackamoors that were being used as slaves in Britain. And while these slaves were well fed, there were white English people who were starving, who would sell their right arm in order to be owned by a master, because the master would then have to feed them. So you can see there that if you were a slave, you actually had a higher status than somebody who wasn't a slave. And yet, as we see here, somebody who profited from slave labour is looked on in a bad way. Why aren't we looking at them as in a way that these people helped keep people alive? They helped provide them with employment. Like today, we look at large employers that employ thousands of people, and we say it's really important that we have these huge employers, because if it wasn't for them, these people would all be unemployed. They'd all be on the breadline, and instead they've got this job. And it's the same back then. If somebody owned lots of slaves, it meant that he was providing sustenance. He was providing the requirements for in order to live comfortably, was actually being given to these slaves. Now, that isn't to say that there weren't bad slave owners that mistreated their slaves. It's the same as you sometimes get bad husbands that mistreat their wives. And this was an argument that was put across at the time. It was that slavery as an institution in itself is neither good nor evil. It's the way that the slaves are treated that determines whether it's good or evil. And we can still see today that we have these huge amounts of empathy for other people groups that gets turned against us. And we feel sorry for them when we see the black Africans starving. And there's a portion of us who say, well, we should just bring them into our countries and then they wouldn't be starving. And we can't look back then 200 years ago and think that white people were a completely different species than they are now. I would argue that they were more moral and more and showed more empathy back then. And it would have been a tiny minority that were mistreating the slaves. Generally, these slaves would have been much better off in America than they were in Britain. And these large employers, also we know that the people with the largest numbers of people under them very often went out of their way to try and help these people. Again, we've looked at these big employers in our Greatest Britain series. I forget the name of which lord it was, but he effectively built housing for them, built clubs for them, built welfare and health for them. The same with the railways when people first started building the railways. And the people that invented that, they built whole villages for the workers. It's the same with Cadbury's, I believe, the chocolate company. And these men that made lots of money from what they were doing, whatever industry they were doing, they would make certain that they also made provision for the people that were working for them, because they knew that they wouldn't have been able to make all this money if it wasn't for the people working under them. And I believe it would have been the same for these farmers in the Caribbean. They would have been they would have had a debt of gratitude to the slaves that were working under them, because if it wasn't for them, they wouldn't have been able to do what they're doing. And also, if you bear in mind, farmers are really nice people. And I don't see why they would have been any different back then, 200 years ago, whether the farmers that worked on the plantations in America were any different to the farmers that work in the fields in Britain today, who I say are very nice people who care about animals. Getting back to this article here, the display, which is part of a new exhibition trail titled Caribbean Voices Shaping Docklands, will open to visitors until January next year. Information panels accompanying the display explain that artworks which might obscure or sanitize connections to slavery can evoke emotional responses. And why might that be? I mean, it's not as if people today have any first-hand experience of what slavery is like. The reason why it might evoke an emotional response is because people today have been programmed to have an emotional response to this. They've been given a distorted view of it. They've been given a very, very one-sided view of slavery. And that's why people will have an emotional response. Now, I believe that if you're going to do things like this and you're going to make these people out to be really evil people, you should also put alongside it the other point of view. And we never hear this other point of view. You'll never see somebody on the television arguing why slavery wasn't such a bad thing, and that it was just the employment system that they had at the time. You'll never see somebody arguing that on TV. Yet if you go back to the primary source material, you will see that the facts of it are that it was just the employment of the time. And if you hear the arguments that I've just been making about these people that own the slaves generally being good people, you'll never hear that argument in the mainstream. So people have been programmed to have this emotional response, especially if they're part of left-wing advocacy groups, and they will get angry about things like this that generally just display people that were involved in slavery. I mean, the church was involved in it, and people will look at that and they'll say, well, that shows you how evil the church were. But the other argument is, well, the church are good people, they follow the Bible. If they were involved in slavery, they must have made certain that the slaves were treated in accordance with Bible tradition, which says that you shouldn't mistreat your slaves, and it tells you that you must treat them well, you must show respect for them. So if the church was to have anything to do with slavery, it really shows that slavery can't have been that bad, can it? The signage also states that museums have a responsibility to give a voice to those whose cultures have been impacted by colonialism. Well, why is that? Is this not a British museum? Should it not be giving a voice to Britain's ancestors? Why should it be giving a voice to people from other cultures that are not British? I would argue that it should only be a voice given to people who are ancestors who are British. If other cultures wish to give a voice to their culture, then they can do that in their homeland, can't they? That's where you would expect to go to hear the voice of the Caribbean. You would expect to hear in the Caribbean, or the voice of somewhere in Africa. You would expect to hear in Africa. You wouldn't expect to hear it in a British museum. Mr. Long served as governor of the Bank of England between 1806 and 1808, passing away in 1820 at the age of 63. During his career, he played a significant role in expanding London's Docklands and held investments in Jamaican plantations that relied on enslaved workers. So his only connection is that he invested in a farming company in the Caribbean. And the way that the farming was done back then, it needed human resources. Today, if you look at farming, we have tractors, combine harvesters, implements and tools that can be attached to the tractors, and everything is mechanized. If you think 200 years ago, you needed people to do this work, and it's not something that requires lots of skill, is it, really? Fruit picking. But the people that did the fruit picking, they were rewarded with a roof over their heads, they were rewarded with fire in the hearth, they were rewarded with all the food that they can eat. They were rewarded with healthcare and clothing that they needed. Everything that they needed was provided for them. So you can see from that it's not as if these people that owned slaves were getting their work for free. They still had to pay for all the costs. And it's pretty similar today. There are jobs that you can go and do, and you'll effectively be working for your keep. If you look at things like apprenticeships, where they get paid a very low wage, it's not even enough really to cover their keep. Some places you can go and work, and what you will get is you'll get a roof over your head, you'll get your food. I mean, it might even still be farm work that is done like this. That if you're working on a farm, you'll get a trailer that you can live in. You'll get your free food from the farm, free place to grow your food. You'll get the clothing provided that you need, and you might get a little bit of extra spending money on top. But it's really not that different today, because it's not a highly skilled job. And also, if you look and you were to look at black Africans and the condition when they were in the Congo, it's like, what else could they do? They can do an unskilled job easily enough, and then instead of starving in Africa, they would be well fed for doing a low-skilled job in America. And again, that's the way that these things were looked at. And that's before you even look at the average IQ of a black African, which is around about 70, which really means that there's only going to be a very small number of them that are capable of doing high-powered intellectual work, but the majority of them would be capable of doing simple things like picking fruit. So it was beneficial, I think. Slavery was a system that was beneficial to the slave, and it was beneficial to the master, and that's the way that it is described in the Bible, and that is the way that it would have been looked at back then. Well, this bank manager, or bank governor rather, of the Bank of England, his name appeared in a 2020 database created by University College London's Legacies of British Slave Ownership Project, which uncovered links between the transatlantic slave trade and at least 25 individuals who held positions as governors or directors at the Bank of England during the 18th and 19th centuries. And of course, if you're a governor of the Bank of England, you're going to need to be investing that money that you have in something that's going to give you the best return on that money. If you did not invest it in something that was going to give you the best return on that money, then you know, you wouldn't be doing your job properly, would you? You would be open to being taken to court for not doing the best that you could actually do with the money that had been invested there. I mean, that is part of the system that we have. That is part of capitalism. You have to invest your money or other people's money in the way that is going to get the most money to come back. So you can't really blame the governors for investing in companies that were involved in slave labour. Following this research, the Bank of England took down 10 paintings and busts depicting 7 former governors and directors whose involvement in slavery had been revealed. Well, this is another thing. They say their involvement in slavery. I mean, literally everybody was involved in it. I mean, if you purchased sugar, you were involved in the slave trade. If you purchased tobacco, you were involved in the slave trade, because that was the system of labour that was used to produce those products. I don't think it's possible to say that there was anybody in the ancient world that, or even in the modern ancient world, 200 years ago, that wasn't involved in slavery in one manner or another. Of course, the other thing with this is that they only ever go after the white people that were involved in it. They never go after the slave owners in Africa, who were the actual ones that enslaved the black Africans and then sold them on to other people. It's not like Europeans went over there hunting slaves, captured them and stuffed them all on the boat. No, the Europeans went over there and the African chiefs said to them, "We have slaves that we would like to exchange with you for your silk or for your gold or for your tobacco or for all of these other goods." And the Europeans would have said, "Well, what have you got to exchange with us?" And the African chiefs would have said, "Well, we have nothing but these other Africans. You are welcome to take them." And that was the way that things were done. It is unknown whether Long's descendants were consulted before the portrait was covered. The museum's exhibition aims to reclaim the histories of colonised Caribbean nations, the role of Caribbean produce in shaping Britain, the contributions of Second World War veterans, and the many ways the community has influenced the local areas, past and present. What are the histories of these colonised Caribbean nations? I don't think there were any indigenous people to these Caribbean islands at the time, and that's why the labour force had to be imported from Africa to work there, is because there wasn't other people living there. I don't believe there were any colonised Caribbean nations. There were artificial nations that were created by the importing of these black Africans, who then became nations in the Caribbean. I don't understand what it says here about colonised Caribbean nations. It was Africa that was colonised, not the Caribbean. Signage throughout the gallery addresses the difficult nature of the collection directly, stating many of the objects in this gallery were created for and through the oppression of enslaved people. And this just assumes that if somebody was an enslaved, that they were oppressed. Whereas the other argument is, if you were a slave, you had all your food provided, you had all your clothing provided, you were warm enough, you had a roof over your head. And I would say that that is not oppression. And, I mean, we even had the same system here in Britain. If you ended up in debt, the way to pay back that debt was that you would sell yourself into slavery for a certain amount of time. And again, that's what it says in the Bible. If you end up in debt, you have to sell yourself into slavery. And all the slaves are released every 7 years or so. Might be 40 years in some instances. You would have a jubilee year. And all the people that were enslaved would then be freed and everything would be reset. It was just a part of the ancient world. I wouldn't say that that was oppression at all. Individual slaves might have been oppressed by a bad master, but in general, if the rules were observed during slavery, then the slave standed to actually gain from being a slave. European colonialists exploited African and Asian peoples and lands relentlessly, it said. I'm not so sure that exploited is a good way to use it. I mean, you can exploit the resources, and that's by just taking these resources and refining them. But as far as these African and Asian peoples were concerned, we prevented them from starving due to famine. We prevented them from being used as human sacrifices. We prevented them from being slaughtered when their master died. And just a way to compare one sort of slavery to another. When the Muslims would enslave Africans or purchase captured Africans and enslave them, they would castrate them, because when they brought them back to the Arab lands, they did not want them any chance of them breeding with the Arabs that were there. So they castrated them. They castrated all the males. When Europeans took male Africans to America, they made certain to bring female Africans as well, so that the male Africans could pair up and have a wife and have children. And that just shows you that there was an empathy. The masters empathized with their slaves and made certain that they had wives, whereas in the Arab slave trade, they didn't empathize with the black slaves and they castrated them. So that shows you the difference. I guess you could say there was different types of slavery, and a slavery that followed the Bible would necessarily have to be a benevolent version of slavery. I mean, there's no requirement in the Bible to castrate your slaves from other nations. The decision to partially conceal Long's portrait comes amidst ongoing debates about how cultural institutions should address historical figures connected to Britain's involvement in the slave trade. Just last week, the statue of Winston Churchill in Parliament Square was defaced by pro-Palestine activists adorned with phrases such as "Stop the genocide" and "Free Palestine." Further graffiti read "Never again is now" and "Globalize the Intifada" sprayed in red paint. Well, I don't see what that has to do with the slave trade, and we did cover this vandalism of the Winston Churchill statue last week in the Daily Nationalist, but we concentrated on it, calling him a Zionist war criminal. In 2020, a bronze statue of slave trader Robert Milligan was removed from its position outside London Museum Docklands after police expressed concerns that Black Lives Matter protesters might attempt to topple it, potentially causing injuries and damage. We also have to bear in mind that these slave owners, these businessmen, they must have been extremely philanthropic if we put up statues to them. If you look at Edward Colston in Bristol, he literally built most of Bristol. And with his philanthropy, he set up schools, places for old children, set up education, made a big investment so that people could have more money from that investment as they went on. I mean, he was a great philanthropist. As I say, a lot of these great businessmen that set up these huge industries, they were also philanthropists. They also gave a lot of that wealth, they gave back to their people. And yet today, we just ignore all of that and say, well, we'll have to hide this statue because Black Lives Matter will destroy him. Well, Black lives actually mattered to these slave masters, you know, because they had purchased them for a lot of money. They spent a lot of money on them. Whereas, as I say, the black Africans in Africa, they never paid any money for their slaves. They just captured them. It was the Europeans that paid out a substantial amount of money for each one of the slaves that they purchased. The same year, London Mayor Sadiq Khan launched a review of statues and street names across the capital, declaring that any with slavery connections should be taken down. And as I say, everything was connected to slavery 200 years ago. So he's literally saying we have to take everything down, destroy everything and start again. However, the government has taken a different stance, opposing the removal of contested monuments and instead advocating for their retention alongside explanatory information for the public. And as I say, that's good, but it's only a half measure. I mean, if you're going to put that there, you're going to put this information there that is going to be negative about that person, you also have to give the information there that would be positive about that person so that people get a balanced view. That way they won't have this extreme emotional reaction every time that they see something that's to do with slavery. They will see that there was a good argument for it and there was a bad argument for it. And there were positive aspects to it, not just negative aspects to it. And I think we need to have both points of view put by these displays, and then people will have a balanced idea of it. So the government's stance of saying, well, we'll just put a plaque there explaining it, that's not good enough, because that plaque there explaining it will just be a plaque attacking that person. There should also be another plaque there talking about the good things about that person. This is the government's position, was reflected in 2021 when the City of London Corporation decided to keep a statue of William Beckford, an 18th century slave-owning Lord Mayor, outside its headquarters after consultation revealed limited public appetite for its removal. And of course, most people don't want to see these things removed. They don't want to see our ancestors being attacked. It's only self-hating whites that wish to do this, and non-whites that have been encouraged to support this and encouraged to see that the fact that they are not quite as successful as white people is because white people made slaves of them. They're the sort of people that will support this. And again, that's a falsehood. If you look at Black African IQ, as I say, it is 70, and there is no better indicator of life outcomes than IQ. If you have a low IQ, you're not going to earn as much money as someone with a high IQ. You're going to be more likely to go to prison. You're going to be more likely to fail at school. All of these things are because of having a low IQ. They're not because 200 years ago, your ancestors worked on a farm. I mean, Europeans have worked on farms for thousands of years. And yet our life outcomes are different to black life outcomes. So it can't be the fact that they worked on a farm. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I know I've talked about this subject before, but it is one that I do enjoy going into. And we get new listeners all the time, and they may not have heard these counter arguments that there are about issues such as this. So thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.